cold down in Fort Myers, Florida, too. It's like 32, I think, was the low.
In New York City area, wasn't much colder. About the same, but maybe even 1 or 2 degrees higher. You know, this is just, I guess, let's just say atypical.
My mom told me it does get that low every now and then in Florida, the lower part, southern Florida, but it's usually only for a day. This time it was for 3 days. The whole time we were down there, it was chilly. Every time I walked the dog, it was cold.
This is about halfway up the coast. Is it considered southern, the southern part? Fort Myers, I think, is around the same latitude as Tampa Bay. It's about halfway up, or am I wrong?
Fort Myers is probably only a 16th of a way up the coast. It's just off, just a little bit further north than Miami. Tampa is halfway up the coast. And Florida is another 2 or 3 hour drive down from Tampa to Fort Myers is a couple more hours, 2.5.
Isn't that a cursed state? I'm surprised my geography is that far off.
It's pretty low. I mean, it's not like the Keys, but it's pretty close to Miami. About the same temperature and everything. It's just on the west coast instead of, like, Miami's more on the east coast.
It's on the Gulf Coast at about the same latitude as Miami. Yeah, I guess I've been actively trying to forget my experience of that sad excuse.
Yeah, it is a little bit different. I'd take some getting used to. I don't know that I would want to live there, but nice to be able to visit my in-laws down there every now and then.
I want to live there, and it gets tiresome even for after a while to visit. I mean, I used to come down, we used to go down there with my parents in like the early 70s or so, and of course it was different then. Miami was almost, not quite a small town, but not a big city.
Did you hear, well, we were gone from last Thursday to today, or we got here a little after midnight last night, and my neighbor across the street's got a really big tree in his backyard, and you can see it from the front yard that's down. Did it get windy here?
Definitely. 30, 40 mile an hour winds near the ground. Sometimes sustained winds. So, yeah, it got windy. And I don't know if so much in this particular area, in Gray Court, but wherever your neighbor was at, you know, probably there, too.
Last night when we were coming through Gray Court on the way back home, up 26 through to 385, we came past Gray Court. I thought about you. But I didn't realize it got that windy around here. I did see a lot of sticks in the yard. I have, every time I take the dog out, I do pick up a handful of sticks. So it shook our trees really hard, but it didn't break anything.
It's almost that fast, that velocity, and it sustained bursts, too. I mean, not just for a minute or two. So, yeah, you don't usually get that kind of wind around here either. That's true.
Merry Christmas.
It's done with. This time of the year is depressing. I don't really want to get into it now.
Was when I was a kid. Best Christmas present I got, my wife got me. It was a book from Neil deGrasse Tyson, the title, A Starry Messenger. Have you heard of it?
That particular book, I don't know. He's probably written quite a few by now.
Latest book. I saw him talking about it somewhere, and my wife noted that I noted it, and she got me the book. I went through the first four chapters on the first day.
If it's that good, I got to finagle a copy from, do we still have public libraries? That's what I got to do one day, is get a library card. Remember the public library before it became a homeless shelter? I used to get a lot of good books out of the library.
Used to be a dog-carrying member of the of the public library, one in Greenville. I don't know, and probably several others, too. I think I had one when I was at Greenville Tech, going to school there. I don't know that they would have that, but the name of it is The Starry Messenger. And it's really good. Neil deGrasse Tyson, he got a little redneck in him. Because he gets angry with people that that do things like that don't make any sense. Sometimes he gets angry with them, and he shows it in that book a little bit.
And everyone who doesn't make any sense, you're going to be permanently pissed off at half the population. Half the people around here don't make any sense. But, okay, I'll, what was the Starry Messenger? I'll have to keep an eye out for it.
The one that he got angry with, it was a woman, Madeline something, that got angry because when Apollo 8, the Apollo 8 mission, it just circled the moon like a dozen times and then came back home. But they read from the book of Genesis about three or four paragraphs out of several chapters, and she sued the federal government for them having done that. And he let her know his dissatisfaction with her lawsuit. Anyway, her lawsuit got kicked out as a frivolous lawsuit. But just the fact that she would do that, because, you know, you're 250,000 miles away from Earth, and it just gives you a totally different perspective of what are problems and what are not problems. Right? We think we got problems. We don't have problems.
Have some kind of snappy comeback for her, like, sorry, I didn't know you were the copyright holder.
You'll get to read what he said to her. Well, you know, he pretends that there's a future, there's a conversation of her back then and him today, and he goes through their dialogue, which is very short and to the point. And by the way, I'm second up in line. If I go missing, you'll know what happened to me.
Yeah, I guess you do have another perspective from, you know, the point of view of Apollo 8. Now, who was it who read the Night Before Christmas? That wasn't Apollo 8, so when was that mission? But, you know, yeah, you know, so they read the first chapter of the book of Genesis, you know, big deal.
I know. I mean, you're deeply impressed when you're the first human beings that ever saw planet Earth from 250,000 miles away from planet Earth. It just changes your perspective totally. And that was the point that he was getting across. And that's the point that they were getting across when they read the book, you know, the book, read those verses. And, you know, it's to reflect. You know, we've always reflected from down here. Even when you get in an airplane and you're flying over the ground, it gives you a little bit of that. But can you imagine being that far out to where you see the Earth coming up over the lunar horizon?
Well, if we ever went there, if it wasn't all faked, right? I'll bet Tyson has something to say about that. All the Apollo moons, the Apollo deniers, or the Apollo hoax people, huh? Also, I've seen what I call the reverse moon landing hoax. There's those that, the ones that say, there was these secret Apollo missions that nobody knew about, where they discovered an alien civilization or something that NASA's trying to keep secret. So you have the ones that claim that Apollo never went there, and the ones that claim that, and funny how a lot of the times it's probably the same people in both groups. The ones that claim, there was all these secret missions that nobody knew about.
So that, he made me place my order. It was my turn up in line. What was the last couple sentences?
Yeah, I was just saying, what would Tyson say about the Apollo moon landing deniers who say that it was we never went there, it was all a hoax? And also, probably some of the same people who said, there was a secret Apollo mission that nobody knew about. NASA never mentioned anything about where they found some alien civilization on the moon or something. And Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if you had the same people in both groups.
To the part of the book, but if he discusses that, that has that in it, it or not. But I was talking to my father-in-law about it, and he said in Greece, they had a tunnel that was, or a well that was really, really deep, and the sun would only go down into the bottom of the well like once a year, depending on the tilt of the earth. And he said with that, they didn't know if the earth was round or not. But with that, and knowing the distance that a city is that was away from them, and when the sun was able to calculate very precisely the diameter of the earth, and they didn't even know it was round.
A variant of that story involving two sticks stuck in the ground. You know, when the sun is directly overhead in city number A, this point that's, you know, so many miles to the north, it casts a shadow of so many degrees, and from there you can figure out the circumference of the earth. Again, they probably weren't really aware that it was round, but I heard some variant of that story with the two sticks buried in the ground.
Somewhere before too, but he made it really, really clear.
I don't know if you've ever seen a Saturn V rocket up close and personal. Trust me, there's no way that this thing didn't go to the moon. I remember seeing it was the one that launched Skylab. It was the last one. We were 100 to 200 yards away from it, and to get a photograph of it, I couldn't get it all in the viewfinder. That's how big this thing is. From a respectable distance, maybe at least 100 yards. So how did this not go to the moon?
Saw one take off, and you know, I never was down at Cape Canaveral when they took off, but I was in the Space Museum, and I did see them laying on their side, and you know, you could stand, you know, inside the cylinder and look up like three or four stories up there to the other half of the diameter of the rocket. That's just hard to believe that thing even worked.
Inside the bell nozzle of the F1 engine. In fact, you might be able to drive a car in there. the nozzle of those F1 engines, the 105 engines in the first stage, you can almost you can put a small car in that thing. You can certainly stand up inside it. Yeah, it is amazing that worked. And they would, you know, there was all kinds of trouble with that engine with regard to, like, uneven combustion. It turns out that you had to drill holes in the intake or something, and the placement of the holes became very critical, and they ended up pretty much just drilling random holes in random spots. Yeah, this will work, because there was problems with fuel flow. When you have to flow in something like 4 tons per second, that's a reactant, and that flow has to go pretty smoothly. And so, yeah, there was a lot of issues, and I'm surprised that the thing worked at all, let alone work as well as it did.
All that rocket science, and they call that different. They're out there with a hand drill drilling random holes. I didn't hear that. That's the first time I've ever heard that, but that would be kind of scary, but I guess when you got, I don't know, I was also looking at those newer rockets, that the recoverable ones that Elon Musk's team has and the ones that Bezos' team has, their nozzle looks very, very small compared to what was on the Saturn V, and I think one of those two is supposed to be able to carry up more weight than the Saturn V.
Artemis thing. That, was it that one? Yeah, it would have to have been. Yeah, that's got slightly higher payload orbit than the Saturn V, but I think it's talking about actual. Saturn V was about 7.5 million pound force of thrust, and this is like 8.5 million. So it's got more thrust, but not by that much. And it's got a little more payload to orbit, because I think it's actually heavier.
Years before they they put a man on one of those things to go out there and circle the moon?
You know what? I can't wait. I can't believe that that's happening in my lifetime. We're eventually going to put a man on the moon. These are great times to be alive.
He was saying in the book, I don't want to spoil it for you. Of course, I've only read the first four chapters. But he was saying every generation thinks that their generation is the greatest generation until you get many generations out and you look back on those generations and you see how primitive they were compared to the, you know, with technology doubling every n number of years. That's, you know, debatable. But they were talking about back in the late 60s when all the Apollo was going on and thinking about how advanced our society was, our engineering, our scientists. And when you look back on it now, it's like, how in the world did they ever survive that?
To keep my mind busy, I used to post answers or questions and answers to this website called Quora, which I gave up that like all the other social media because it started to get, you know, started to get overrun with Nazis like Twitter and Facebook and everything else. But somebody was asking me, I can't believe that they went to the moon without the internet, without, you know. So I said something like, you know, I've never seen a computer take off the desk and fly around the room. It's not computers that got to the moon, it's rockets. We had rockets in the 1960s, probably before that. So, yeah, all these under 30-somethings that are amazed that something like that could be done. Oh, they didn't have GPS. They didn't have the internet. They didn't have, you know, what else. Well, you know, apparently didn't need it.
And the landing, you know, the first landing, it was going to be the computer that landed it. But it misbehaved, and that's, you know, because of how primitive they were back then, that's no big surprise that it did misbehave. And was it Neil Armstrong, I think, was the one that had to pilot it down to the ground manually? That'd be kind of like flying a radio-controlled helicopter without a gyro. That'd be really hard to do.
Not any real manual in any sense of the word. It was still a fly-by-wire system that you could fly manually, because the computer still had to orchestrate that delicate ballet of firing a dozen thrusters to make it do what you wanted to do. But yeah, what I heard about that is that was because Armstrong or somebody had the... Actually, Armstrong wasn't the lunar module pilot. That would have been... But anyway, the landing radar and the rendezvous radar were left on at the same time. And that was causing confusion as to, you know, what the altitude was, which is why that was happening. And that alert that came to over the computer, that 1201 or 1202 alert, something about the, you know, too much data for the computer to handle, is basically what that amounted to.
To that detail, I just needed something went wrong, and he had to switch it off and his hand. And they didn't land where they intended to land either, because it wasn't as smooth as they thought it was. So he had to actually fly it a little bit further on its trajectory to find a better place to put down, which wasn't that far away. But still, you know, you start deviating from the master plan, and there's no telling what's going to happen. Those guys were either really, really brave or very, very naive, one of the two.
On the other hand, landed within about 100 meters of where it was supposed to go, and I think that was automated. So, I mean, the automated system did work. They put down within... I could probably look it up on the photographs. I measured it off the photographs one day. They put down within 200 meters of Surveyor 3, the old Surveyor 3 probe, and one of the missions was to go out there and pick up the camera from that or pick up some other piece of equipment that was on Surveyor 3. So, you know, well, now Apollo 12, I don't know if you know, had another problem. It got hit by lightning twice within the first minute of flight. And let me not time out the repeater. There is... Lightning hit the thing about 30 seconds. seconds after launch, and again about 50 seconds after launch, and knocked out the auxiliary power units, knocked out the navigation, knocked out the computers. So basically at that point it was a flying rock with no guidance and, you know, no anything. There was one ground controller that, this is how good these people were, these ground controllers, they had good engineering skills, because he conjured up some unexpected, you know, some switch that would normally not be set during flight. Okay, flip this switch to this position to reroute power, and they got the power back. But it's something that only an engineering geek would have thought of.
Were that good. I think they were just really, really good. Very, very confident and spent a whole lot of time practicing. Anyway, I'm at home. Pick up that book, A Starry Messenger, if you get a chance. It'll be hard to put it down to do something else. You'll find out you use up a whole lot of time reading it. Anyway, good to talk to you, Glenn. I'm going to go in and eat some lunch. KD2BNG, W4DJW.
W4DJW, KD2BNG. Always a pleasure. And I'll keep an eye out for it. Maybe again, I'll get a library card and see if the library has it. Anyway, you take care. Nice. Talk to you later.
Little Delta 4, Sierra Romeo Romeo, Robert down in beautiful sunny Joanna today, looking for our friend in Gray Court. And of course, I never remember call signs. Are you monitoring?
Did I hear something?
Heard me. This is Kilo Delta 4, Sierra Romeo Romeo. I was looking for our caller that calls in from Gray Court on the net most nights. A real jovial fella, and I can't remember his name or his call sign. You know who I'm talking about?
That jovial
one. Oh, yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. You're jovial. What the heck was going on last night with that guy from Greenwood when he chastised and lambasted you for using the H word?
If it was me, I don't know. Yeah, you know, yeah, some of the old timers are very, I can't just refer to the Northern Dictionary of Cuss Words. I got to use the much more extensive Southern Dictionary of Cuss Words. I got to, you know, I don't, if somebody said something to me, I don't need it. It's been forgotten by now.
Scanning, and you said you found the network last night. It was on the 165 repeater out of Greenwood, and the guy that runs that little Monday night net, he's got some obscure little 440 repeater that I've never been able to get on, even though I'm allegedly closer to it. And he always goes on, you know, and I'm not kicking him for his faith and beliefs, but he has to go on and on and on and on and on when he does a check-in to their net about those beliefs or any other net, including South Carolina Heart. I'm certainly a motor mouth myself, but, I try to throw in something to my and others' disdain eventually. Lengthy diatribes sometimes. When I don't really want to get on rack chew, but this guy takes it to the extreme. And the one thing is, he is not the Greenwood Ham Society or Radio Club over there. He's just a fairly recent member who feels like he can chastise people. It's his duty to do that.
He checked into some net starting around, there was a net around 8 o'clock. Some net I never checked into. I have it in the radio as W4GWD, I think. I don't know where that is in Greenwood or where it is. I just got the list of all the repeaters within 50 miles of here and just plugged them all into the radio. So I heard some activity on that one, and I just checked into that one. Yeah, I don't really know if I remember anyone like that. But, so, must not have been me he was complaining about.
Must not might not. I believe it was you because you were kind of being yourself and talking, and you said, like, you know, it's this or that or what the hell. Yeah, I said it, which I don't consider. That's certainly not a broadcast offense with the FCC for commercial radio. So I believe it was you. But, yeah, you said you were the person was from Gray Court and was doing exactly what you said. Well, that's one reason a perfectly great repeater gets very little usage. First off, Greenwood, you have Patrick, who's a faithful member on there because it is very close to him. But it's located on the shores of Lake Greenwood, really in, somehow or another, in Lawrence County. It's considered a Lawrence County repeater, although I thought it was on that side of the pond, Lake Greenwood. But anyway, it's a very good repeater, but by the grace of South Carolina ETV, that club is allowed to operate off that tower and for the exchange of keeping up the transmitter site, i.e., mowing the grass. So any controversy of the type that I experienced last night and almost wanted to jump into, but I didn't because I was occupied with something else, is tenuous at best if they get any complaints because they're getting free access to a state-owned tower at a very high altitude in an optimum place. But it has very, very, very little usage.
Yeah, no, I was on that repeater. Yeah, it was. Yesterday was the 25th. Or no, yesterday was. I remember being on that repeater last night. There is some guy called Patrick, that was mentioned. That, as I said, I just happened to tune in and wasn't even really sure there was a net going on. It kind of sounded that way. But. Yeah, you know, you can't say the, what was that George Carlin bit? You can't say the seven words you can never say on TV. If you know that bit, which obviously I can't repeat. But, yeah, some people, I gotta remember to use the much more extensive dictionary of Southern cuss words. Because apparently the Yankee dictionary doesn't cover all of them.
Said, oh, hell no, it'd have been all right.
They get very touchy about that down here. It's almost like they take it personally. When KI4MLN was live, I had to drive them one day up to Spartanburg, some hospital in Spartanburg for some medical appointment. And there was some difficulty in the scheduling, and they weren't getting back to us. He kept calling them, and he finally gets there, and he says, "Why don't you people answer your effing phone?" Ooh, that got them angry. Yeah, you know, you can't, they're very touchy here, down here about that.
But on ham radio, unfortunately, not me and you, are touchy about everything because, you see, they think of themselves as the owners of the frequency, more so than in a lot of other areas. But yet these owners don't use the frequency that much. So we've got, like me, I've got 50-some repeaters, and I hear activity on maybe, if I'm lucky, it's a good day, five of them. So, you know, lose it or use it. I have no problem as a born and bred Southerner to usurp your territory if I don't hear nobody using it. I move in. I'm a squatter. What the heck?
A squatter, or a spectrum squatter, you know, some of the ones that have taken over the other parts of 11 meters, which, quite frankly, I can't strongly condemn them because no one's using it anyway. We should make use of the 20 other repeaters around here that no one ever seems to use. There's another W4NYK repeater. You the other mountain, whichever mountain this one's not on, Harris Mountain or Caesars Mountain. And I don't hear any activity on that one either. Right?
I mean, I haven't heard anything on it in a long time. Is it even alive? I've tried to key it, and yeah, it keys, and then sometimes it don't key. But, you know, somebody just ain't felt like going up on the mountain and taking a look at it. That's what you got a lot of issues here. When South Carolina Heart had all kind of relay problems, and here they're supposed to be the penultimate number one emergency net, even over Skywarn, and heck, I mean, they conducted their Sunday night net, and the host couldn't hear anybody. Everybody could hear him. It was like the Carol Burnett skit with the intercom. She kept saying hello because she wouldn't take her finger off the button when Tim Conway, her boss, was trying to talk. She didn't understand two-way.
Beats us both if we both remember that sketch. If you have it in your radio, we can QSY to the 820 repeater and see if it's live.
See if we can do it. If you got the time, I'll do it right now. This is KD4SRR, clear, and moving down to 820. If I can remember where I put it.
For KD2BNG, I think it's in here as WNYK-2. Let me find that one, and I'll meet you there.
We're on the way. KD4SRR, clear. KD4SRR, I'm back. I couldn't get it to key. I get it to key, I could not hear any. I couldn't hear anybody going into it on the output frequency. 4SRR waiting for the other station to return.
GG. Quest Y back to this thing eventually. No, I'll go back to the other one.
KD4SRR, I got it to key a few times and then it got stuck. It did three. Quick tones, and then it died again. Are you back? This is KD4SRR monitoring.
Yeah, I'm back. I just, when you do that, I guess you got to set a time limit. Okay, both go there now, and in 2 minutes come back. Because I didn't know if you were still there or had already jumped back here. It seems like once in a while I'll get a courtesy zone, but sometimes not. And I had I couldn't do anything on low power. Crank it up to 40 watts, I could get the courtesy zone sometimes. So it's half alive.
I'm third. Remember when we had to get off 146610 for a nightly net? Maybe you do. And we went down to 146, the backup, and 820, and it acted up, and Chad was mad and frustrated a little bit, and I didn't blame him, because the backup really wasn't working real well. And in this case, I'm running 80 watts into it, and it worked, and then beep, beep, and it wouldn't activate anymore.
That not so very long ago, where there were so many jammers on the frequency that, all right, everyone, let's QSY the hell out of here. So that repeater, I don't know, it partially works. And that's too bad, too, because that's the one that had the phone patch.
Yeah, I remember the jammers. In fact, I mentioned that. They've been trying to get the Fleet Talk 146625 with a DCS of 315 working on Little Mountain. And it works, but it kept getting noise. And then so a friend of mine, but they're not really using it, and now Fleet Talk's talking about putting applied to put a 440 up there, which will have a short radius, but if you're anywhere familiar with the Fleet Talk system, it kind of fills the gap between the new one in Clinton and the Blythewood repeater, which I can actually hit from here with just a J-pole. But the 146625 is still a good repeater, excellent repeater, great range. I mean, we talked to someone in Johnson, South Carolina, over toward Aiken, quite a bit on it. and it's fleet talk, but it's not linked because of the noise. Well, we had a non-ID caller, like the one Chad had that got on the frequency that night and wouldn't give his call sign. We had one of them talking about hot miking and all. And we repeatedly asked for his call sign, and then I basically told him in exact tone and wordage of Chad, if you're not going to give your ID, get the H off the frequency. So, you know, now we're wondering if some of the inadvertent noises were deliberate jamming. So we're going to let the admins know about that. But that's a big problem, is that you've got some folks who, for whatever reason, got ticked off. But instead of just saying, hey, I'll go to another frequency, they just want to meddle and mess with the people who enjoy what's out there.
625, and it's got a DCS tone. You know, there may be one frequency I have programmed in here. It might be that one, and I found it remarkable. It's the only one with DCS. But what's the tone? Do you know?
All the fleet talks 315. I think the one, the 2 meter on top of the Bank America Tower, does not have to have a tone. But I could be wrong. That is a 2 meter. And it's up on the 60-story BOA tower in Charlotte. But most of them are 440s, except for one in Aynor, South Carolina. People always get a giggle out of that. And that's actually sometime during propagation, because it's 147210. You can hear the output frequency interfering with 147210. Also on Little Mountain, which is another repeater that has some occasional usage, but used to be hot to trot. It was the repeater if you wanted to talk to Aiken, over to Augusta, whatever. And it's virtually unused most of the day anyway. But 146625, when it's not being jammed or whatever, picking up noise, is probably the best sounding repeater of them all that I've heard, and a lot of them. I mean, it's a newer radio. It's just got a warm, nice sound to it. But it's 146625 DCS 315.
Okay, I have it in here. 146625 DCS zone of 315, and I have it in here as W4FTK. Yeah, because I just went through repeater book and I said, you know, give me all repeaters within like 50 miles of me. So yeah, that one's in here.
You might be able to hit the one in Clinton. But you being in Gray Court, it'll definitely reach you, the 443675.
Some frequency ending in 675. I don't really see that in here. I'm looking at the actual data that I programmed into the radio. In Clinton, I'll try to find it.
Watts, but it'll get you almost down to Newberry. Reason that they were going to do Little Mountain with the 146625, but now they're going to have to do it with a 440 with a shorter distance of only 13 miles, but that would be enough to fill the gap between the Blythewood repeater, which is 443650. I think it also is on an ETV tower, but a really, really tall one. Or it's either a state tower or something like that. That's an amazing repeater. Gets all up and down I-77. But all of them are, by the way, are that W4FTK. That's just fleet talk. So you can get in on Echolink. And there's a fellow from Australia and a couple of other long-distance locations that get in every day or so.
Put all these here in order of frequency. So I have something at 146685. I don't know about 675, because these are all ordered by frequency. 146 46685, I have here at K4USC, and so it's University of something, and, with no zone. But 146675, maybe I'll put in here.
No, it's a 440. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you didn't hear me. It's a 443675. Most of fleet talk is 70 centimeters, with the exception of 146625. And the one in Aynor was way over near Myrtle Beach. And then I forget the one in Charlotte that's up on the tower. I think I tried it once, the BOA tower. But the one in Clinton is 443675, also with the DCS of 315.
Because I heard something 43, I'm saying there can't be any frequency that begins with 143. Okay, 443675 with a DCS tone of 315. Well, I have a 70 centimeter radio here right on top of this one. I got to look for another microphone. But, yeah, I'll try that one day.
Peter is on a tower right where the two interstates split. Going down past the pilot truck stop, which is now the 19, good buddy. We still pilot, but it's like their minor brand. It's for small, insignificant towns. But it's somewhere going down Highway 72, very close to the interstate. And it's only 20 watts, but it does a darn good job, unless you go toward Greenwood. And if you get on 72 as it's going toward Greenwood and Athens, Georgia, Abbeville, then it just drops off the map. But anywhere from downtown Clinton, once you get into where they call it Broad Street near the college PC, then it picks up great. And it's only 20 watts. It does an amazing job. And it should get up to you because I know I picked it up and been able to have a good conversation up to Fountain Inn. But it really gets strong at Gray Court is usually the best place. And that gets you into the fleet talk system, which then you can hear what everything's going on in Columbia and occasionally Myrtle Beach and then down in Sumter. They've got two in Sumter. That's actually the one in York is kind of a secondary test network. They have one on Lake Wiley that's a 440, and then they have the 146625. It's kind of like a subnet linked while they do these tests. But like I said, now that I've had a jammer come up and actually the noise we were hearing on 146625, we're thinking it's deliberate and not a not just because there's so doggone many towers, they're getting some sort of cross-channel interference breaking in on that 146625, that is. But anyway, I know I'm throwing a lot of numbers out there, so I don't mean to confuse you. As I speak rapidly and still slur my words, KD4SR RID.
Well, yeah, here's the 70 centimeter radio right here. I just got to either put an antenna switch or something. And where's the other microphone? I got two identical radios set up here. They're both Midland commercial radios. One's a VHF and a UHF radio. So this probably sounds reasonably good on the air because commercial equipment is usually pretty good in that respect.
Well, home or are you on the road? Because you've got a Metis repeater. I don't know if I'm getting the same effect back at you, but either the repeater's noisy or you're getting it almost like you're riding with the window down at 55.
Butter. This is at 40 watts.
Man, give it the gas.
5 watts, and I think there's only two positions, 5 watts and 40 watts, or 45 watts. So this is the 45 watts, if that's any better.
Oh, have mercy. Is it better? You have doubled the double. So you have quadrupled your output. You were doing good at 5, though. Yeah, I mean, now I'm here, it was 5. I mean, gee, Manetti. I need to get me one of them radios for UHF, man, I'm telling you. After my QYT died at the QT in my favorite parking spot, and it's in a box, and QYT is totally unresponsive, even though it was in the warranty period, and it's now a collection of junk. I thought about, just for the limited use of UHF, that I might transfer this Yazoo into my primary antenna's position and just find one of those Midlands, if I could get it cheap, and program it for the handful of UHF that I want to hit.
I'm on eBay just now, but not that cheap, maybe about $200. The VHF models I've seen cheaper on eBay. This one I think I may have gotten for like $75 or something off of, here's his QSL card that was in with the package, KD9MEQ. I think he's somewhere in Indiana, but yeah. Now the reason I have one is this, the UHF one is the one that came out of the taxi cab, so I had nothing better to do with it.
Yeah, you know, and I figure, what does it have, like 8 channels or 12? It's either 8 or 12. That's buku enough for me. I just want to be able to get the extra power when I'm traveling about, and I don't mind having it hooked up, you know, under the dash or the seat or whatever, just for that use to monitor. And the Yazoo, I'm not interested in the digital. I just want a yak, as you can already, the world knows. But anyway, I just want something I can monitor, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of money, and I wanted to have a big amp, so I don't have to buy a linear. I've got a linear, and the guy was very good about accepting the return, but it had a lot of noise in it. It just age, we all get old, and it did too, so, anyway, he took it back, and that would have still been extra cable, so just get a heavy-duty, I mean, if it's a taxi cab radio, you know it's got to be heavy-duty. And pick one up for, you know, I've seen them as cheap as 50. What is it? Is it a Kenwood 880H or something like that?
Get that. Now, here's something I discovered almost by accident. There's an 8-channel, a 32-channel, and a 128-channel version. You know what the difference between them is? Nothing. All you got to do is edit the code plug for the 8-channel one, write it back to the radio, and mysteriously now, suddenly it has 128 channels. That's a very Motorola thing to do. But yeah, this particular Midland radio, now I have them both expanded to 128 channels, which, you know, if it's a mobile radio and you drive through 3 or 4 zones on a regular basis, you know, now you've got all the repeaters for that zone.
Question is, for me, though, would it do DCS tones? Can it be programmed to reproduce them?
These type of radios usually excel. Yeah, we got CTCSS, we've got DCS. We've got two-tone and five-tone calling sequences. We've got DTMF calling sequences. Those are usually, there's a lot of options in these type of radios. So, there's a two-tone sequence I can put in here. If anyone, you know, some equipment uses those, where you have a high and a low tone to address a specific, you know, group of radios, or a DTMF sequence. Yeah, usually that's one thing commercial equipment does have, is there's a lot more options.
Give me one of them.
I'd sell you this one if I had something else for 70 centimeters. Well, I mean, not this one, obviously, the other one that's just like this one. Yeah, I saw the I saw them on eBay, this particular model for like close to $200. But you know, generally any other commercial model, probably you'll do closer to $100, maybe less. I've seen them real cheap.
In fact, I'd even be interested in getting one that would do that. Since somebody mentioned, what was it, 23 centimeters the other night, 900 megahertz? If it's cheap enough, I wouldn't mind trying that. Yeah, you say, well, I want to have a radio to do all in one. Not necessarily. You know, but if you can buy three, you got to find power supplies and you got to run cables and antennas and all that stuff, I know. But, you know, the more the merrier. And if you can get all this extra stuff, since single band, some mono band radios, the more for it. I had a chance. They had a mono band, and I'm not interested in fusion or digital that much, but they had one. It was a 3207 or something like that, 3507 Yazoo, that was a mono band 70 centimeter with fusion radio. And there is a repeater. Well, it was a darn good radio to begin with. It was 65 watts. Practically new in the box. Somebody got it, didn't know what they had, and they never used it. So it was new old stock or just open box. And I wish I'd still kept bidding on it. I think it went for like $143. Well, it's almost the equivalent of the FTM 3100, except it had the fusion on it. And so that would have been nice to have if I ever decided to hit a fusion repeater. But in the meantime, it was a darn good, offend anybody, just good radio. And I wouldn't mind in the car, heck, I'll put two antennas on it and wire it into the fuse box with two separate supplies, you know.
Monoband radios, because usually, well, not always the case, but usually a multiband design always represents some kind of engineering compromise. In other words, having something that does 70 centimeters and 2 meters, you'd be better off performance-wise or quality-wise or whatever if you had two different radios. Now, that may not always be true, but it seems to be almost by necessity it has to be true, especially with HF multibanders. A good monoband design is a good thing to have.
I wouldn't mind finding, and I think Olenko's one of the few that still manufacture. When I got on my rant the other night about 6 meter, why we're not using that, and basically we're not using that because we're not using it. A lot of those who did use it were only happy with the magic band if they could talk to Alaska or Timbuktu. When the frequency was open, they were not interested in talking further across county lines, getting further, meaning than 2 meter, and definitely 440. So I wouldn't mind having one, and I'll see one of those for $50. We're not talking about ancient technology, but you know, something, you know, made within the past 25, 30 years, that's in good shape, and probably not been used a lot. If I got 10-meter, I probably would want to get one with 12-meter for the occasional use. And, yes, I would probably get it for 11-meter, you know, capability, too. Albeit, shame on me, slapping the hand and, you know, virtually for wanting more than 4 watts on 11-meters. You know, stone me, I wouldn't mind having about 25 or 30. Certainly Uncle Sugar shouldn't be too upset about that.
Well, I can't strongly condemn the Spectrum Bandits because apparently no one else is taking advantage of 11 meters. There is one or two, maybe one land mobile channel near the top of 11 meters. And, you know, the 11-meter citizens van, which has become, you know, mostly useless anyway. So the whole rest of the band, you know, I don't even know if there's an FCC band plan officially for what to do with it. So if they want to stay there and use 11 meters, I can't really fault them for it.